You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com. I need some touching.
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve!
It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio. Now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve. My little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who keeps the alternative medicine wackos at bay. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you got a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcast, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Go to our merchandise store, cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. If you want to email us, you can just go to drsteve.com and click contact. Follow Dr. Scott at drscottwm on Twitter, or follow me at weirdmedicine on Twitter. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse, practitioner, physician, assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. You know, it's after the holidays. It's our first show of the new year, Dr. Scott. Whoop-dee-freaking-do, another artificial milestone. go to stuff.drsteve.com and buy anything you damn well want. How about that? You can get anything you want there. stuff.drsteve.com. Just click through to Amazon and just have a big old time. Or you can scroll down and you can find all the stuff that we talk about on the show. tweakedaudio.com. They're the only earbuds that last for my kids. Everything else they break, those last forever. Tweakedaudio.com. Use offer code FLUID and get 33% off your earbuds or your complete order. And they have the best customer service anywhere. That's Tweaked, T-W-E-A-K-E-D, audio.com, offer code FLUID. And if you want to get to your ideal body weight, which, by the way, after the holiday, I'm going to have to get back on that. But the great thing about it is, I know I can do it. There's no anxiety about it at this point because I've been a member of Noom for over a year now, and it really does make things actually pretty easy to get to your ideal body weight. It's not a diet. It's a psychology program. Get 20% off and 2 free weeks by going to Noom, N-O-O-M, .drsteve.com. Come on, you know you blew it over the holidays.
Yes.
Just, it's time to do it.
Yes.
And freshly.drsteve.com delivers fresh prepared meals that make eating right super easy. You can use my link to get 6 dinners for $39 for 2 weeks. That's $20 off each week. If you like it, keep doing it. If you don't like it, just cancel. Give it a try and let me know what you think. It's freshly.drsteve.com. Now, look, they're never frozen, but they come refrigerated in a biodegradable box, and it's all pre-made. Now, it looks like it's lean cuisines, except it's twice the amount of food as in a lean cuisine, and it's better.
Okay.
But it is microwave, so it has that microwave character. If you don't like that character in your food, I get it, but I am just lazy, and this is 3 nights a week I don't have to cook because, as you know, Dr. Scott, I do 100% of the cooking in my house. Now, over the holidays, I kicked some damn ass, let me tell you this. First off, I cooked my turkey in a pressure cooker.
Okay.
It was a turkey breast. I couldn't fit a whole turkey in, but it was perfect. Took 30 minutes.
Wow.
From thawed.
That's a great
30 minutes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it was perfect.
Yep.
Juicy. I ran it under the broiler just to crisp up the skin on the outside, which you shouldn't be eating anyway, but still
it's
just
physical appearance.
It looks, yeah, it looks better.
Yeah.
And that took another 3 minutes. Really nothing to it. So that was great. But and all the, you know, the sides and all that stuff. But when I got back, I got inspired. And I know you don't eat meat, but I made a short rib, braised short rib recipe. And I made a homemade ricotta gnocchi.
Oh, wow.
And it was so great. I hate that I wasted it on stupid P.A. John.
You let him come over?
Yes, of course. But he came over, and he was like, this is the best meal I've ever had. Oh, the flavors. And he was going wacky about the the mix of flavors in his mouth. Because I made a bunch of other stuff to go with it,
How
too.
How funny.
But this recipe was inspired. I combined a couple of recipes and adjusted some recipes. Because we ate at a place in Sullivan's Island, South Carolina, called the Obstinate Daughter, and they have
the best ever.
They have yes. We'll give them.
Oh man, they're great.
Oh, now if you are in the Charleston area, make a special trip to get to the Obstinate Daughter. It is fantastic.
Yep.
And
you need reservations about a month in advance.
A month?
Yeah.
Come on. A month is particularly in season. It needs to be at least 3 to 6 months in advance.
Yeah, you're probably, yeah.
But you can call them, or they're not on Open Table, but I found that they are on Resy. It's a different reservation app, R-E-S-Y.
Okay.
And you can get on there and tell them Dr. Steve sent you. They don't know who the fuck I am.
No,
but
tell them anyway.
It'll go, who's that Dr. Steve guy? But they're very inventive bunch of young chefs, and they made this ricotta gnocchi with braised short ribs. But I went one step further. You got the whole bone in rib. They did, they take it off and mix it up in the gnocchi. I had the after I made the gnocchi and boiled it, and it rose to the top, and I drained it. Don't ever rinse it, by the way. Put it back in the pan with the a little bit of the short rib juice,
sure,
and some of shreds of meat, and agitated it around. And I put that just to the side of these big giant ribs where the meat was just basically falling off the bone. It's so effing good, dude.
Mm, cool.
And I hate black eyed peas, but my wife wanted them
too.
For good luck.
Yeah.
Well, you can't eat this, but I made an awesome black eyed pea recipe, but it had bacon and ham and stuff in it and some Cajun seasoning. And that was the first time I've had black eyed peas where I could eat them, because to me they taste like dirt.
I don't like them.
But this was awesome, but yeah. I could maybe try to modify it for for your pescatarian.
I could stretch it just a little bit.
Fish bacon or something, but
a little bit.
And then I made an awesome collard greens and
sounds good.
Some other shit like that. So anyway, then the next night I made cheese grits. And so there's another restaurant, and you can't get reservations. It's called Page's Okra Grill. Page's Okra Grill is in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. It's just before you get to the big bridge to go over to Charleston from the Ravenel Bridge.
Okay.
Big giant bridge.
Gotcha.
You can't get reservations. It is worth the wait. If you get there early enough, they open at 5. If you get there at like 4:30, 4:15, you just sit around and wait. Sometimes during the season, they'll have a bartender out there. You can get drinks. And then when they open up, then you can get right in.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go late, 8:30, something like that.
Yeah.
But they have a shrimp and grits. And what they do is they take cheese grits and you cook them, you put them in the refrigerator. And then in the morning, you cut them into triangles and then you deep fry them.
Wow.
So they're crispy on the outside, but, still grits on the inside.
Okay.
And then you put that on the plate and then put your shrimp and grit roux or whatever, the sauce with the shrimp and the andouille sausage and the spices and all that stuff around that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fantastic. So I made that the next night.
Page's Okra.
Yeah, Page's Okra Grill.
Gotcha.
All right. And then if you're down there and you want to go fishing, check out Avid Angling. Avid Angling is Captain Mike. I've been trying to get him on this show for years. He's basically a part of our family at this point. And, he's known the kids since they were 4 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They're 16 now, so we've been going out with him for about 12 years. And, we know his wife. We've met his, his baby. Just had a baby. We used to hear about all his girlfriends before he hooked up with this one. So, anyway, pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Don't forget to check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. You got anything to over there these days, Dr. Scott?
Nothing new.
Nothing new.
Yeah.
But you've got the nasal spray back in stock.
Coming back in stock, yeah.
Still coming back in stock. That was 6 weeks ago.
I know.
What the hell?
I know. It's a pain.
So walk us through, I mean, how effing hard is it? Okay, so you have this formula.
Yeah, no, it's just...
And you don't want to give out the formula because it's proprietary, but it's, you know, buffered saline and some peppermint oil, right?
Yep.
So the peppermint oil not only smells good, but it's anti-inflammatory at the level of the mucous membrane. That's been demonstrated, so that's cool. And buffered saline, we know, is beneficial for, you know, washing mucus out of the nose. So, and I find it to be quite delightful.
And the peppermint oil is great because it opens and dilates and
does
nasal passages.
So does it have vasoconstrictive properties? Have you demonstrated that?
No, but I could look it up on friend PubMed.
Look it up then, because I'm going to give you one of these right now. But then I'll give you one of the good ones if you can find it. But yeah. So
what we're trying to do is trying to come up with a little bit different formula that has a little longer shelf life.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
So coming up with some dried honey and mixing that in a little packet like they do in some of these other larger saline solution things.
I don't know that I like the whole honey thing.
No, we've used it for years. You like it. You've liked it for five years. Then.
Oh, it's in there? It's in there already. Oh, okay. But that's why it's got a crappy shelf life. Is that why? Because,
the research I did, though, that every single nasal spray on the market across the board, Nasonex, Flonase, et cetera, all of them.
Can you list some more? You just said all
but these
of
are
them,
good
and then
these
you just went and listed two of them.
These are good ones. Well, those are good ones. But there's a lot. I guess my concern is bacteria getting into the spray. So what we're looking at is trying to come up with a little bit different.
How do you make sure the honey is sterile?
Well, honey won't grow bacteria in it.
Because, okay.
Yeah.
That's true and also not true. Mm. Botulism can grow on honey. That's why they recommend that you don't give honey to
under 1 year olds.
You know, rarely could get botulism from it.
So
what Dr. Scott's talking about is the Brix level. So it's BRIX. If you have a high enough concentration of sugar, you'd think, well, sugar, you know, bacteria love that. But if it gets high enough, they actually can't maintain their cell membranes and they can't reproduce. That's why you can sell concentrate of like if you're a winemaker, you can buy concentrate. And if it's got a high enough Brix level, if it's been concentrated enough, they don't even have to pasteurize it, and it'll never go bad.
Right. That's one thing we love.
Nothing can grow in it.
Yeah, we found that some of those nasal sprays do have a little shorter. Are we in trouble?
Yeah, I'm going to need to get this, and we'll come right back.
Go ahead.
After this brief interlude. Damn it! God damn it! It's terrible. Anyway,
I felt
interlude. I just, you know, instead of playing music, I just came straight back because we're very unprofessional.
I did find something interesting about peppermint oil. Per the question was, is it
vasoconstrictor?
Constrictor. So, yes and no.
Oh.
It's actually a vasodilator and a vasoconstrictor.
What?
Strangely enough, yes.
So there are different receptors, and there are things that
could be,
you know, if it's hitting the alpha receptors, it could, you know, constrict. And if it's hitting the beta receptor, it could dilate. Yep. And, you know, something that do both could really do both. But you would think, you know, it's going to be context dependent.
Yep.
Because if you have something that's both a constrictor and a dilator hitting the same receptors in the same area, well, it'll have a zero net effect.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what the answer is.
Well, according to this website, it says peppermint oil actually has the ability
This
website, the ability to constrict blood vessels.
Would make it a vasoconstrictor. So why are you saying it's both?
Well, it says it's a vasodilator. When it's applied in certain instances, it's a vasoconstrictor.
Like which ones?
Well, it says if you apply it to the skin, it's actually a
vasodilator.
Well, it says it's a vasoconstrictor.
What?
Yeah, it's because it hits those, because it's got to be stimulating those alpha receptors in the skin, you would think. I couldn't find anything on PubMed yet. I just found this other place that looked interesting. Okay. It says, hey, three uses for peppermint oil for men. That's got to help us.
Right? Oh, this is from newmanrevolution.com.
Exactly. It's got to work.
Give us a...
This has got to be perfect.
Okay, here we go. Effects of peppermint on exercise performance. This might get us somewhere where we want to be. This is from the Journal of the International Society of Sports Nutrition. It says the results of the experiment support the effectiveness of peppermint essential oil on the exercise performance gas analysis, spirometry parameters, blood pressure and respiratory rate in young male students. Relaxation of bronchial smooth muscles. So that would be, you know,
a dilator.
Like a, that would be a dilator, a smooth muscle relaxer, mm-hmm. which, what's another one? Albuterol. Mm-hmm. When you inhale that, when you have asthma, that's what's doing is it is relaxing, you know, bronchial muscle, opening up the bronchial airways.
Right.
So let me see. Increase in the ventilation and brain oxygen concentration, decreases in blood lactate level are most plausible explanations. Okay, so they had 12 healthy male students every day consuming one 500 ml bottle of mineral water containing 0.05 ml of peppermint essential oil for 10 days. So they took this in orally. That's very interesting, isn't it?
And yeah, and it's got to be super-duper small doses.
And then they tested them.
Strong.
Yeah. They tested forced vital capacity, peak expiratory flow rate. So these are spirometry things where you breathe into that
right.
tube, and it measures airflow in and out of your lungs, and peak inspiratory flow were determined one day before and after supplementation. And then, they saw significant improvements after 10 days. That's interesting.
Now, how much, Dr. Steve, again? Because I'm going to take that.
I know, no shit.
Because the way I've had this...
Well, it doesn't say what the concentration of the essential oil was, but it was 0.05 ml. So that's 0.05 of a milliliter. Mm-hmm. So it ain't much. It's microliters.
About a drop per...
Yeah, maybe.
8 ounces or something like that, or even less.
It'd be hard
than that.
To measure that. You'd have to get a really small pipette to do that.
Yeah.
So 0.05 of an ml.
Into what was
you could do it another way by concentrating it. If you know, so one way that you could do this mm-hmm. is you could take if you had 1 ml mm-hmm. of peppermint oil, then you could calculate how much it would be to get this concentration.
Right.
Which is. What did they say? 500 ml to 0.05 ml. So that would be 0.05 divided, or 500 divided by 0.05. Yeah, you could figure that out pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the ratio you want.
Okay.
500 ml of water to 0.05 ml of peppermint essential oil to reproduce this experiment. Not recommending anybody do that. But
I'll try it first.
Yeah, you can
try it. And that way we'll talk about it next week.
So that doesn't answer our question about whether it's a vasoconstrictor at the mucous membrane, but at least that's in a peer-reviewed journal, not
Men's Health.
newmanrevolution.com, which I'm sure they're fine.
And they're probably fine.
Now, here we go. A near-fatal case of high-dose peppermint oil ingestion, lessons learned. Near-fatal case due to ingestion of toxic dose of oral peppermint oil is being reported. The patient came in a comatose state and was in shock. She was managed with mechanical ventilation and inotropes. That's, don't worry about what that is. It's stuff to make her heartbeat better. Her vital parameters reached normal within 8 hours, became conscious by 24 hours. The side effects of peppermint oil are considered to be mild, but this case report warns that ingestion of toxic doses. So what's a toxic dose of peppermint oil? Let's see. This makes me, we need to probably get that. Let's see if Echo knows. Echo, what's the toxic dose of peppermint oil? See if she knows anything.
Here's something I found from the article Peppermint on Wikipedia. High oral doses of peppermint oil can cause mucosal irritation and mimic heartburn.
I'll guarantee
you. Well, I'd say that's true, but this is way worse than that.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Lethal dose of peppermint oil has been documented in experimental studies. It has a 24-hour oral LD50. So what that means is lethal dose in 50% of people. So that's sort of the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
Of 4,441 milligram per kilogram in rats. In the 48-hour LD50 was 24. So... the precise amount of peppermint oil ingested cannot be ascertained. The case described here, she was just drinking it.
Ugh,
so 4,441 milligram per kilogram. So let's say a 70-kilogram man. That's going to be a lot of damn peppermint oil.
That's a lot of peppermint oil.
That's going to be 4 times 70 grams. So what's that, 280 grams?
I don't know how in the world you
well,
can...
that might not be that much. 280 grams. Let's say...
drop of that shit's too much.
Let's...
you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy moly.
Let's say it was the same density of water, which we know it's not.
Right.
It's going to be less than water. I'm assuming peppermint oil floats.
Yes.
Okay. So it's less dense than water, but let's do... let's find out how much that is. So what did I say? 280 grams?
Mm-hmm.
Alexa, how much water is 280 grams? It's going to be 280 milliliters, but...
You used her wrong name.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Echo. Shit.
I forgot the question, too. I think our senility
you
is kicking in. You
have 20 questions enabled. Do you want to open it?
No, thank you. No, thank you. Okay, so 280 grams of water in cups is what? Okay, let's try this. Alexa, God damn it. Echo, how many cups are in 280 grams of water? Piece of shit.
There are 1.2 cups in 280 grams of water.
Okay, so, it's less dense than that, but that's fine. You know, if you're drinking a cup of peppermint oil, you're in a...
tough SOB.
But that's interesting that a cup of peppermint oil will just about kill you if you don't have mechanical life support.
That doesn't surprise me at all. You know, in one thing I know, because I think the peppermint oil has the menthol in it, so that's why it does have the analgesic, anti-inflammatory effects.
I don't know.
But that stuff is so strong. Lord, I mean, I know you cook a lot and I cook a lot.
Yeah.
Just a drop of peppermint oil is too much. I can't imagine a cup and a quarter of it.
I'm going to look up active ingredient in peppermint oil is menthol. Yeah. The main chemical constituents of peppermint oil, essential oil are menthol, menthone, and one. Yeah, I'll give you one of those.
Lucky guess.
Give yourself a bill.
And 1,8 cineol, menthyl acetate, and isovaleriate, pinene, limonene, and other constituents. The most active of these components are menthol and menthone.
Yep. Makes sense.
Cool. That'd be a good name for a band, Menthone. I don't know why. Hmm. All right. Well, anyway, so it remains to be seen, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that it's probably is vasoconstrictive at the mucous membrane. I'll tell you why, because we use it for irritable bowel syndrome. And one of the issues with irritable bowel syndrome is people have leaky, loose junctions in their...
those diverticulum.
Okay, this is at the cellular level. Mm. So the cells all bind together, right? They have to kind of tie together, but they're loose.
Right.
And so when you've got a loose junction between the intestinal cells, and it's particularly if it's leaky, it's really wide open, and toxins, there's that word, but these are for real. These are real toxins.
From the poo.
We can come in contact with tissues that they're not supposed to.
Okay.
And that causes inflammation. Okay. And that causes irritable bowel. At least that's one of the hypotheses. And peppermint oil works really well to close up those tight junctions. There are other medications like lubiprostone, a.k.a. Amitiza, also does that.
Huh.
And both of them are good for irritable bowel syndrome. So if it closes up those tight junctions, you know, presumably there's some constriction of something going on.
Makes sense.
And that makes sense.
Yep.
On some level, I do know, you know, all I was trying to do is give you an effing plug, and it ended up being a, you know, 14-minute dissertation on peppermint oil. But it's still pretty interesting.
Yeah. The peppermint oil is really good for IBS. For those who maybe have not heard our discussions on that before, it works extremely
well. Yeah, and you
well.
Can check it out. It's sold in an enteric-coated version called IBGuard.
IBGuard, that's right.
And
we talked to the guy that made it.
Pretty outstanding stuff, really. Yeah, we did. That's
right.
Sure, it was a long time ago.
He's from South Alabama.
And my kid takes it. He's got bad irritable bowel syndrome. It really helps him a lot.
I take it, too.
He never forgets to take it because it really helps him.
Yep.
And you can check it out at stuff.drsteve.com if you're so inclined, if you just want to look at it. I just wanted to give you an interesting article, and then we've got a bunch of cool phone calls to take. Injecting the flu vaccine into a tumor gets the immune system to attack it. Now, this is from Ars Technica, not a medical journal. is a reasonably interesting article that one of our Twitter followers sent us. So that activating the immune system at the site of a tumor can re-engage the immune system, because we've talked about this. Cancer is a problem with immune surveillance, where the immune system, all those cells that are supposed to be finding foreign tissue and abnormal tissue and killing it and then eating it and then, you know, shitting it out and into our system so that we can then excrete it in our own urine and feces. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work. It just goes right on by the tumor for whatever reason. It recognizes that tumor as being normal. And if we could get the immune system to wake up, and you can go to drsteve.com and click on non-pseudoscience cancer cures in the upper right-hand corner. Those are all articles about harnessing the immune system to kill cancer. And so, let's just take a look at this article. A number of years back, there were a great deal of excitement about using viruses to target cancer. We know that one for multiple myeloma, where they used, and it's called viral oncolytic therapy, they used measles vaccine.
Okay.
Gave the patients 6 million doses of measles vaccine. The measles virus, which is a live virus, live attenuated virus, goes to the multiple myeloma cells. And then what does the body do to cells that are infected with measles? Kills them.
Kills them, right.
And for whatever reason, measles loves multiple myeloma cells.
Hmm.
So they even tagged these things. They genetically altered this virus to take up, to express a receptor on the surface of the cell that would take up radioactive iodine. Then they injected them with radioactive iodine. It didn't kill the cells or anything. It just marked them. So then they could put them in a scanner and see where those viruses went to. And they all went to the multiple myeloma tumors.
Wow.
And then the body goes in and just kills those cells. And next thing you know, you don't have any multiple myeloma. So that's something that's coming. So that's what they're talking about. A number of viruses explode the cells they've infected in order to spread to new ones. Engineering those viruses so they could only grow in cancer cells would seem to provide a way of selectively killing these cells. And some preliminary tests were promising, showing massive tumors nearly disappearing. The results were inconsistent. There were complications. The immune system would respond to the virus, limiting our ability to use it more than once, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you make antibodies to that virus, when you inject it again, the body just uses those antibodies and neutralizes it. Some of the tumor killing seemed to be the result of the immune system rather than the virus. Yeah, well, that's right. Now, they focused on the immune response, inducing it at the site of the tumor, and they do so by a remarkably simple method by injecting the tumor with flu vaccine. As a bonus, the mice were tested on were successfully immunized too. So, yeah, you have cancer and you're an anti-vaxxer. Oh, well, we're going to cure you anyway, and you're going to get your flu vaccine.
And not catch the flu.
That's right, and not die from the flu. So let's see here. They moved to mice using melanoma cells that can form tumors when transplanted in the lungs of mice. These model systems often respond to treatments that don't end up working in humans, so the results have to be treated with appropriate caution. It's, you know, you don't have to pad these articles out so much. Just tell us what the hell. They injected these melanoma cells with influenza vaccine, and it wasn't even virus. And okay. So it's more stuff. This is a shitty article. Okay. It's hard for me to get to the meat of it. But it's just another idea in this advancement of using the immune system to fight cancer. So we're getting there. We're getting there. Said here, some vaccines contain chemicals that enhance the immune system's memory, promoting the formation of long-term response to pathogens. Those are called adjuvants, by the way. When a vaccine containing one of these chemicals was used, the immune system wasn't stimulated to limit the tumor's growth. So, yeah, so you want to give it the pure stuff with no adjuvants. That's interesting, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, cool.
That's crazy.
Yep. All right. Let's. I want to take this one, and then we're going to try something.
Okay.
And let's just see. Oh. First thing.
Hey, number Dr. one thing. Steve, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
Wait, what, Ronnie B?
Give yourself a BL.
No.
Number one thing, don't take advice from some asshole on the radio.
Queen, I really messed up this year. My wife is a nurse, registered nurse, and I don't have good enough Christmas presents for her, but we've been listening to you for a long time. And she would really appreciate, like, if you just gave a call back, or she just really enjoys your show. And, like, I've been listening to you forever, since the Opie and Anthony days. It's just something that your show is something we can always talk about together. So, like, I'm in a panic here. Christmas gift.
Okay, so doing a club. Dude. It's January 3rd.
It's a week or two too late.
Yeah.
Be able to
email me. You guys can email me. Just go to drsteve.com and click contact, and you can email me anytime. If he had emailed me, I would have done this.
Give her a call and just tell us, hey, this is Dr. Steve. Hey, I'm here.
Hilarious.
And thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it. She's a nurse writer, and she's got, like, really good, like, nursing experience, like oncology and, like...
This dude is totally wasted, too.
Yeah.
Just, she really appreciates your insight. And
okay, didn't give us her name, didn't give us her number. He did call back and give us her number. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's just call her. See if she answers. If we get her voicemail, I'll have to cut it off, and then we'll edit this out, but...
Mm-hmm.
Let's just see what happens here.
Hopefully she's not working nights and trying to get a good night's sleep.
I know. All right, come on, let's go. Okay, calling, calling, calling.
Ring-a-ding-ding.
If I have to leave a voicemail, I will.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Still calling.
Ring-a-ding-ding.
One ringy-dingy.
She probably thinks it's some...
Two ringy-dingy.
She probably
thinks... Well, no, she didn't send us...
Call has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging system.
There you go.
Two.
La 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 la.
I can't hear you.
I don't know what you're talking about. La 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 la. Gotcha.
Is not available. At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Hey, it's Dr. Steve from Weird Medicine. I hope I have the right person. Are you the wife of the dumbass that called us and said he didn't have enough Christmas presents, and would you just call my wife? That would be a good Christmas present. If you're not that person, I apologize. If you are, well... Merry belated Christmas. I guess we got his message on January 3rd. He is a genius.
He's obviously plans ahead extremely well.
And I'm not 100% sure he'll even remember calling us the way he sounded on the voicemail. But you can listen to this on our show this week. So anyway, sorry we missed you. Would have loved to have had you on the show today. All right.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year's.
See ya.
Give yourself a bill.
All right.
Let's hope that was the right person. If not, somebody's going to have a great surprise.
You think so?
Oh, yeah.
You think that'll be a great surprise?
Great surprise.
Or just an awful, awful
surprise? Oh, I think it's
surprise.
Fantastic.
All right. Let's take some other phone calls here. See what we got.
Hi, Dr. Steve. My name is John from Northwestern Pennsylvania. And I have this up here now, for us at least, it's freezing cold outside. We don't have a whole lot of exposed, any foliage. I was actually in the woods a week ago, and I was moving a trail camera for deer, and I realized a couple days later that I may have poison ivy. I heard you talking about it.
Ugh.
And the poison ivy I have, and I don't know that it's poison ivy, I should clarify that, is in my, around my belly button, for lack of a better term, area. And it is, I know it doesn't spread, and I hate to beat a dead horse here, but
that's okay.
Could it be anything besides poison ivy if it's leaving, you know, somewhat of a rash and it has a almost like a mucus-like discharge? It's getting on clothes, et cetera, et cetera. I'm thinking it's some variety of poison ivy, poison oak, poison something in the woods that I hate with all of my might.
Yeah.
But my wife keeps telling me it's probably a skin infection or something that was in your belly button that you did not get out.
Ew.
Is
gross.
That a possibility? I look forward to hearing from you.
Anything's
possible.
I'd
have to see it, but I mean, he says mucus. Now, when you have a contact dermatitis and you have a type 4 delayed type hypersensitivity reaction, that's what poison ivy is.
Right.
So, you know, you can have an immediate immune reaction, which is like anaphylaxis. Mm-hmm. So you get stung by a bee, all of a sudden you can't breathe. That's an immediate hypersensitivity reaction. Mm-hmm. You come in contact with poison ivy, and maybe a day later you get these blisters, and then, you know, when you got, you know, 3 or 4 parts per billion, and then it might march up your arm as the concentration gets less and less. So the places that were stimulated with the least amount of antigen come out last, which gives it the illusion of spreading. Mm. Now, redness and heat, so that should be blistery with clear fluid. Mm. So if that's what he means by mucus, then okay, yeah, then it could be this. Mm. But if he's got actual discharge and it's not from broken blisters, then that's not normal. Mm. If he has redness or pain, you know, mostly it's itchy.
Right.
Pus, fever, spreading redness, any of that stuff, that needs to be evaluated right away. You can get cellulitis, which is, you know, a bacterial infection of the skin that can be life-threatening from poison ivy because you're opening up, you know, areas of the skin that bacteria could get in and then, you know, invade.
Right.
So you got to be careful about that. So anytime you see that, if it isn't just itchy, blistery stuff, then, yeah, you should get that checked.
Agreed. Yeah, I've had the poison ivy so bad. I had poison ivy on top of poison ivy. I had blisters and pus and everything.
God,
oh,
yeah.
That is horrible.
Oh, you can get a super infection.
Oh,
sure,
man.
That's a great bacterial culture medium.
Oh, my goodness. It was terrible. Terrible, yeah. Terrible. But, you know, the only other thing I was thinking is maybe a bad case of shingles even, depending on.
Yep. Okay.
But I'm like Dr. Steve. If it's not just itchy.
Well, he says it's at the belly button. That's a weird place to get shingles because shingles usually comes from the spinal column.
Right. And follows.
There are these little ganglia on the way to the spinal column, and the ganglia are just a collection of nerves. And that's where this stupid virus, once you had chickenpox, it retreats to one of those and it just sits there.
Yep.
And when it comes out, it will always be just on one side or the other. It's weird. Unless you've got some, you know, you got a bad immune system. You've got a normal immune system, it will come out and it will follow where that nerve goes. We call those dermatomes.
Right.
And so, like, if you have one in your rib cage, it will follow the rib. And, of course, it'll spread out. It's not, you know, the little fibers spread out everywhere.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But it will tend to start higher in the back and end up lower in the front because those things come around kind of in a spiral form.
And the wraparound in the front.
Right. And they descend. They follow the rib. Mm. And then, you know, if it's farther down, but it'll always be on one side of the body or the other. Yep. If it's on your face, could follow that trigeminal nerve or other nerves.
Right. Have you ever seen it on both sides? I've seen it one time on a guy's back. And on both sides of his back.
I've seen it.
Once.
I've seen disseminated varicella zoster. Mm-hmm. You know, you really couldn't call it shingles at that point. What it was, he
that
had it everywhere sense. Because he had a bad immune system.
Okay,
you know
that explains it. Yeah, well, I'm betting he's got some poison ivy.
There's
some variation
too.
Yeah.
If he's not seeing pus and, you know, expanding redness and all that stuff, that's probably what it is. You can put some hydrocortisone on it. If it doesn't get better really quickly, just go to your primary care. If that's the diagnosis, they can put you on a short course of oral prednisone. That stuff goes away just almost immediately.
Yep.
Prednisone being a oral corticosteroid or just a steroid, not a Schwarzenegger steroid, but a corticosteroid.
Not anabolic.
That's right. All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Cammie in Texas.
Hey, Cammie.
My question for you is, can I get any diseases from rimming my partner? And of course, I'm asking for a friend.
Of course.
Thanks so much. Love the show. Bye.
Thank you. Yes, of course. So rimming, what she's talking about is getting down and licking around her partner's asshole, which, you know, which that is the medical term for it, by the way, is asshole. It's when you're licking one. And I don't know. God, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Sorry about that.
This is one of those things where I do whatever you want to do. I don't understand it. No. I don't want anybody's tongue anywhere near where the poo comes out, and I don't want my tongue anywhere near where the poo comes out. I've told you my story about the time when I was performing cunnilingus on my partner, and she got up and said, hey, I got to go run to the bathroom real quick. And I figured she just had to go
motion
pee.
Motion detected at the front door.
Okay, thank you. And
someone is at the front door.
Okay, thank you. I just thought she had to go pee.
Yeah.
And then she comes back and lays down and says, you may proceed. And I get back down there, and then I get this waft of fresh turd smell. And it was like, I cannot believe.
Sweet mother.
You let me do that.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, some people don't have that taboo. Yeah. You know, this is horrendous to me.
That should be an automatic. At least give them the option.
There reason why you can't lick your own ass, and you know why? It's because it's gross, and there's a reason why your ass is as far away from your mouth as you can make it, and still have a functional GI tract.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
It's literally as far away as you can get it, and still be in the body.
In the torso, right?
Because you know it'd be dumb if it was like in the heel bottom of your feet ankle or something. That'd be stupid.
Pop a hole in your ankle.
Yeah,
but can she
just
catch
shitting out of the bottom of your foot?
Yeah, can she catch a disease from that?
So,
well,
let's talk about.
Yes.
Okay. there are diseases that are contracted by the fecal oral route. And that's a particular route of transmission of disease where pathogens in feces pass from one person's ass to the mouth of the other person. So when you are, you know, sucking on someone's rectum, that's the classic transmission. But now what if he doesn't have any of that stuff? You know, he, for the most part, if he doesn't have, well, let's look at the different diagrams that you can have. There's cholera. He probably doesn't have cholera. C. difficile. Ooh, you know, there is.
Yes.
C. difficile causes a form of diarrhea that can be community acquired or acquired through taking too much antibiotics. And it can cause a life-threatening diarrhea, but he probably doesn't have that. He wouldn't be having intercourse if he had C. diff.
No, and he'd be rushing to the bathroom.
Shigella, probably. Same way. He'd, you know, that's dysentery, bacillary dysentery. Salmonella typhi, which causes typhoid fever, campylobacter, that kind of stuff. Now, the one thing that he could have is an enterotoxigenic version of E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
So E. coli is the normal turd bacteria. Most of the time you can get a little bit in your mouth. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. But if he had some that had a toxin that it was producing, and this, by this I mean a real toxin, not the kind of toxins that you're
that you detoxify with a...
Right, right.
That a detoxifying drink.
Right. And then there's other viruses like hepatitis A. He probably doesn't have that. Norovirus, that's Norwalk virus. That's the virus that you get. You used to hear a lot about on cruise ships. They've gotten really good about putting a stop to that crap. Polio, well, both of them have probably been vaccinated. So, probably you're going to be okay. But if he has any of these diseases, tapeworms, toxoplasmosis, giardia, all these things that really would probably, he would be so sick enough that you wouldn't be having sex with him, then you could get that. But other than that, it's just poop in the mouth. And if you get too much of it, your stomach doesn't like it. But most of the time, the stomach can just kill it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand it, but there you go. If you eat feces, there's a term for that, a medical term for that. Do you know what it is?
Gosh, no, I don't.
Coprophilia,
nope.
Yep. So anyway, let me see what if they say that there are any diseases. And then the act that she's talking about is analingus. That's the oral and anal sex act, which a person stimulates the anus of another using the mouth, including the lips, tongue, or teeth. Hmm. It's also called anal oral contact, and anal oral sex is additionally known by slang names. Ooh, what slang names could they be? Okay, so anyway. So, probably not, but yes, there's a non-zero possibility you can get a disease. Well, there's a non-zero disease possibility you can get a disease by blowing him, too.
Sure.
You know, if he has herpes or, I don't know, herpes or gonorrhea or syphilis, then, yeah, you could get it from that. But, you know, he probably doesn't have those things.
Mm. Or her.
Or her, right. Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, she was talking about her boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
I think... maybe I presumed that. Now let's just see if I'm a damn genderist. I see.
Presumptuous. Hey, Dr. Steve. This is Cammy in Texas. My question for you is, can I get any diseases from rimming my partner?
I am a genderist. She just said partner, so he or she.
Non-specific.
Yep. Or they.
Rim away. Just be careful.
Well,
practice good hygiene.
I guess. Well, that's the definition of not good hygiene.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe use a finger instead of a tongue.
Oh, do whatever you want to do. don't listen to us. You know
it's
what?
It's 2020. It's a new decade. Do whatever the hell you want.
I don't want anything for anybody.
Who cares?
I mean, lots of people lick other people's rectums
lick
and
away.
They do just fine.
Lick away.
I'm not going to say that. That's Dr. Scott saying that. I'm just going to say that there's a non-zero chance of getting diseases, but most people do okay.
I agree. Non-zero.
And Dr. Scott's the one that's telling you to actually do it, and I'm not doing it.
I'm telling her that. Just do whatever she wants.
Well, you know, yeah, okay.
Yeah, be cool.
What up, Weird Medicine?
Hey, man.
Question.
Okay.
What's the difference between oxycodone, which I believe is Percocet, and hydrocodone? I think the...
Okay. If that's the basis of the question, they are both opioids, meaning that they both stimulate the mu opioid receptor. And the mu-opioid receptor, when it's stimulated, and there are other receptors too, oxycodone also stimulates the kappa receptor. Don't worry about all that stuff. There won't be a quiz afterward. But these receptors, for the most part, cause pain signals to be dulled going to the brain. They also can slow respirations. They can make your eyes, the pupils small. And they can slow down your GI tract, and they also prevent cough. You know, they're antitussive. So they do a bunch of different things when those things are stimulated. Now, oxycodone and hydrocodone are kissing cousins. They're just a couple of molecules different. They both hit the same receptor, but they've got somewhat different properties. The oxycodone hits more of the kappa receptor than hydrocodone does. It's more potent.
Yes.
20 milligrams of oxycodone is equivalent to about 30 milligrams of hydrocodone, that kind of stuff. You know, if everybody responded the same way to every drug,
there wouldn't be a bunch of
choices.
Then
we'd only need one drug.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay.
The oxycodone, and that shit makes me itch.
Oh, yeah.
And I take, it keeps me awake at night. I can't sleep. And I want something that works better. Would switching to hydrocodone help? What is it? Is it like Vicodin? Is that what Vicodin is?
Yes.
Vicodin is?
Vicodin, Norco.
Thanks.
Lortab. Bye. All those things are all hydrocodone. Those are just brand names, but the underlying name is hydrocodone. Now, in this country, we don't make a short-acting version of hydrocodone that doesn't have acetaminophen or Tylenol in it, so you can only buy it in combination with Tylenol. Oxycodone can be gotten with Tylenol or without. When it's bundled with Tylenol, we call it Percocet because that's the brand name. And if it's not, then it's Roxycodone or just oxycodone immediate release. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and I have seen a number of folks, they tolerate one versus the other in many, many instances. So what this guy's asking is a very good question.
Yeah, it's everybody's different.
Yep.
You know, there is opioid-induced pruritus. It's probably pruritus is a fancy word Well, I don't know if it's fancy, but it's another word for itching.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why we can't just say itching in medicine, but we have to say pruritus. And looking at the prevalence, it looks like 69% in non-pregnant patients, including males and females. Now, that is for, wow. Wow, that's a high number. That's higher than my experience has been. But let me see. The mechanism is the presence of an itch center in the central nervous system. So the reason we itch is it's called formication. And it's probably because back in the caveman days, it let us know that there were bugs on us and to get rid of them.
Okay.
So, and these things stimulate those same receptors and cause this feeling of itching. Looks like, modulation of serotonergic pathway. I'm looking, pain and pruritus, yeah, blah. You know, if you have someone that has liver disorder and they're jaundiced and they itch, have you ever seen them?
Mm-hmm.
That is caused by peripheral stimulation. In other words, stimulation in the skin of mu opioid receptors, which are the same opioid receptors that morphine and hydrocodone, oxycodone act on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have somebody with jaundice that's itching and they're not on opioid pain medications, you can put them on an opioid blocker called naloxone. It's just a pill. It totally goes away.
Wow.
Totally goes away. If they are on opioids, you could put them on a what we call a peripheral mu opioid antagonist, which just means a drug that blocks the opioid receptor, but not in the central nervous system. Right. It only does it in the skin. But the problem with those is they're crazy expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Naloxone's dirt cheap when you just give it in a pill form. But if you've got to inject somebody or give them a pill of these peripheral opioid receptor antagonists, they're really, really expensive.
Hmm.
And mainly because they're new. Right. Someday those.
Honestly, I don't even think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah. So the brand names are Relistor. You've heard of Relistor.
Mm-hmm.
Methyl naltrexone. So what they take naltrexone, which is a drug that blocks opioid receptors,
right,
put a methyl group on it, and now all of a sudden it bangs up against the blood-brain barrier.
Oh, can't go through.
Can't cross.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Now it will only do things like stop you from having constipation and stop itching caused by, you know, stimulation of those receptors.
Well,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's
it's
pretty
a neat
cool.
idea.
That's a great idea, actually.
Yeah, and there's another one, naloxegol, and then there's Simproic is another one. So, yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. But anyway. All right. Everybody's different.
Sure.
Everybody responds to these things differently. If I take hydrocodone, it keeps me up. I've only taken it once, but it kept me up.
Mm-hmm.
Oxycodone, I'm fine. My wife, if she takes hydrocodone, she pukes.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother-in-law, if she takes oxycodone, she itches.
Yeah.
So everybody's different. And if you itch on one, you might not itch on another one. So they can, you know, switch you to the different thing. If your pain is mild to moderate, they could put you on a non-opioid, mu-opioid agonist, which would be, and so that's like a non-narcotic narcotic, if that makes any sense.
Right.
And that would be things like tramadol.
Tramadol
is one. It's really not derived from opium. That's what opioids are.
Mm-hmm.
But it still hits those same receptors. It's been reclassified as an opioid just because it's addictive, mm-hmm, and it hits the same receptors. They just had to change the definition a little bit.
Right.
But anyway, tramadol might be an option for you. And just taking an anti-itch medication, if you really got to have it and that's the only thing that works for your pain,
yeah,
they can treat the itch. There's lots of different medications.
Yes.
There is, Vistaril is one, an antihistamine.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is shit fire. This, I've been having this all day. I didn't get enough sleep last night,
mm-hmm,
and I'm starting to forget things. Let me see. There's a nortriptyline, amitriptyline, and then doxepin. Is it doxepin? Yeah. Is it doxepin? Maybe. Anyway, one of those is, tricyclic antimony. That's it. So it was called Sinequan. I knew I had an S in my name. So doxepin is a very potent anti pruritic or anti-itch medication. It's prescription only. Mm-hmm. Benadryl you can buy over the counter.
Right, I said Benadryl you can take anytime.
Not a big fan of just taking Benadryl every day because there's problems with just taking antihistamines day in and day out. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, doxepin is one that a lot of physicians aren't aware of that we use all the time with really good success.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Dr. Steve. I'm a 44-year-old guy from the Northeast. Got some health issues. I'm 5'11 and 300 pounds, definitely overweight, trying to get a hold on that. And multiple sclerosis, diabetes. So okay. The question I have for you is, they told me I have fatty liver,
okay.
And I got some pain in my abdomen, and I've had a problem lately with bleeding. So no matter how bad I cut myself or... no matter how bad I stick myself, even if I stick myself with an insulin needle, I bleed like crazy.
Okay.
I wear one of those continuous glucose monitors,
yeah.
And I put a new one on my arm today, and I actually bled through it.
Okay.
Through the plastic.
Okay, I'm just going to stop him right there. That shit's got to get checked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming he's got bruising some places as well. He needs a complete blood count, see if his platelet count's okay. If his platelet count's okay, then the other thing they're going to do is a thing called a ProTime. And what they'll look at is, does he have coagulopathy, which means does he have the inability to, you know, coagulate blood properly because of his liver disease?
Mm-hmm.
Because the liver participates in the creation of these pathways that that lead to blood coagulation. It's a really complex pathway, and there's all these different factors that have to be present to coagulate blood properly. Why on earth the universe, you know, created something so complex, and any defect along the way will mess things up. But they'll check that out. And yeah, we need to get that. If that's caused by your liver failing, then we need to get on top of that. So you'll need to see a hepatologist. Fatty liver can be treated. Most of the time, we'll start with medications like metformin, and maybe even a statin or some other medications to decrease triglycerides like prescription strength fish oil. But a low-carb diet will go a long way to get rid of non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, which is what this is, which is fatty liver with, you know, liver damage that's not caused by alcohol. Okay? So go get that checked out right now. He just called in the other day. This one wasn't. I don't think this was sitting in the queue for very long.
Good.
So. Yeah, he needs to get on it right now. All right. Okay. I think we got time for one more.
Happy New Year, Weird Medicine.
Amen.
Me.
So this new year, I'm looking to improve my health, and I hear you talking.
Is this the same guy? The voice sounds similar.
About this calcium score test.
Nope.
And I want to get it done. I'm in my mid-40s now, and, you know, just I've got this fear of clogged arteries and stuff. Is this something my primary doctor can do in
yes.
the office with the jelly and the ultrasound wand, or is it something that they have to refer me to like a imaging MRI center? Is it
okay, great question. The calcium score we've been talking about is a score to kind of just quantify your risk. That's really simple to do. You can go right now and just search Framingham calculator and calculate your own risk score. And then you can combine that with this, and it gives you a pretty accurate idea of how much lifestyle or medication change you need to incorporate into your life to decrease your risk of heart attack. But calcium score is CAT scan.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be between 40 and 75 without diabetes, because if you're between 40 and 75, you have diabetes, you're already at high risk.
Mm-hmm.
And with an LDL score of anywhere between 70 and 189, and any risk of cardiovascular disease greater than 7.5, so they'll do a Framingham score for 7.5% over 10 years. So you kind of have to have some risk factors first, but you don't want to have your pretest probability. In other words, yeah, you're at high risk already. This is supposed to tell you if you're at risk. So they're looking for borderline people to do this on.
Good.
And if you meet those criteria, yeah, a lot of times you can just walk straight in and just get one. Our hospital, I just walked in and asked for it, and it was $50. So anyway, you know, just talk to your primary care about it. You could call the hospital, see if they do them. And then, you know, whatever. Bula, bula.
Bula, bula.
Go have a big old time. All right. Yeah. Well, thanks always goes to Dr. Scott. We can't forget Rob Sprance, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, Travis Teft, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharski, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose early support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel. SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks go to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules, podcasts, and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. All right, Dr. Scott, a little extra something. You got your instrument ready? What the fuck are you doing?
Oh, I thought you recorded that last one.
No.
Oh, hell, fire.
I haven't recorded anything.
Oh, yeah. I'm ready.
I wish I had. All right. Let's see here. Let's get you a little reverb.
A little reverb, yep.
Yep. Ooh. Oh, that's me. There you go. Let me see. Let's hear. Give me a
test. All of me.
And now,
all of me.
If you're going to hit that instrument as hard as you did last time, I'm going to back you down just
yes,
a little bit.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Because you distorted like F.
And I turned my volume down on this thing, too.
Okay. Well, you don't have to turn it down too much.
All of me.
Well, you just gave it away. Spoiler alert.
Three,
we're doing all of me.
Two.
Okay. Take two.
Let's give it a
that
shot.
That sucked balls. All right, let's do it again. One, two, a one, two, three, four.
All of me. Why not take all of me? Because you know I'm no good without you. Take my arms, I want to lose. Take my lips, I'll never use them. Your goodbyes left me with eyes that cry. And I know I'm no good without you. You took the part of me that once was my heart. So why not take all of me? Take all of me.
Hooray! I remember all the words.
Well, given that we learned it literally a minute ago.
1 minute ago. We practiced one song.
I'm not real big on the walking bass, but I'll work on it.
No, that could be a good job. Man.
All right. All right, everybody. Happy New Year. Shit on you. As we say in Hindi, Naya Sal Mubarak Ho. This means Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
And Bahwaz. Apna Bahwaz. Hey, that means you are bullshit. All right,
guys. Okay. See ya.